You're listening to WORT Madison.
Ancestors surround us. Rise in hope, in prayer, we find.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice. So nice, so nice. I got you.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us as always, the man who knows everything, Mr. Smartin Pants.
That's Dr. Smartin Pants to you.
Dr. Smartin Pants.
I have a doctorate in thinkology.
Did you get it from the wizard?
I certainly did.
Yeah. Hey, we actually have a guest here today.
Oh, my God.
My goodness.
That's what that is. Okay, it's a guest.
There's a person sitting next to you.
Oh, heavens above.
He hadn't noticed.
It's in my own little world there.
Michael Graff is joining us. Mike?
Thank you.
Michael?
Mike's fine.
Okay.
Mike works just great.
Good. Yeah. Speaking of Mike, get up to the mic.
Get up. Get a little closer.
Is this much better?
Oh, much better. There you go.
Yeah,
so,
thank you very much. So
Mike's you're a screenwriter.
Screenwriter, filmmaker. For years I've been telling people that I have a face for radio, and bam, I'm finally on the radio. Thank you, guys.
And you'll notice we share that trait, by the way, with you, so you know, we know exactly how it feels.
So you're here to talk about film incentives for filmmakers in Wisconsin. Have I got that right?
Yeah. We can talk about that.
Yeah. So what's the name of the group you're in? It's got an exclamation point in it. I know that.
It does. So it has to be good. It's Action Wisconsin. And Action Wisconsin.
Oh, like Action, like the movie.
Action. Yes. Yes.
Action.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
And Action Wisconsin is a grassroots organization of filmmakers and artists and creative types that have been lobbying the state of Wisconsin to get incentives passed to encourage filmmaking in the state of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
We are one of 13 states that don't have any incentives whatsoever. We're one of three states that don't even have a film office. And which is kind of shocking considering that the number one export industry in the United States for the last 75 years is the entertainment industry.
Really?
It surpasses aerospace, automotive, pharmaceutical, military, you name it.
It's mostly porn, though, right? So.
No, I think that comes from Canada.
But it's so cold up
there.
We
need more tariffs. More tariffs.
Our friends from the north.
But before we get going, I just want to say, we had our film festival show last week, and we wanted to have somebody come on and talk about this, but we ran
out. Ben Reiser said that they had more films this, I think they had 50 Wisconsin's, our homegrown films.
Yeah.
So that's a lot.
Yeah.
But I mean.
But we didn't get a chance to talk about this.
Yeah, we didn't talk about this.
So this is kind of like a footnote to our show last week. We couldn't squeeze somebody in. And Mike's been gracious enough to come in here and talk to us for a few minutes about this. So.
Well, thanks. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
So why should we have what kind of incentives are you talking about? Like tax credits and things like that? Or?
What we've been proposing and what Governor Evers put into his budget this year is a transferable tax credit, which allows filmmakers to actually sell those credits on the market to help finance or pay for their films. The reality is that just about every piece of entertainment that you see today that's streaming or on broadcast is made with incentives.
Mm-hmm.
Every major Hollywood studio, every major Hollywood producer will not produce anything without any kind of assistance from whether it be a state government or a province or a foreign country. HBO, went recently their CEO gave a keynote presentation, and he said, we will not greenlight any projects without incentives attached.
Really? Wow.
So it's really, really, it's necessary. And it's really an economic development package that we're not taking advantage of in this state.
Yeah, we see a lot. You know, at the end of a lot of movies and TV shows, you'll see one of two things: you'll see the Georgia peach, or you'll see something about Vancouver. I think I know those ferns in Vancouver by heart.
Vancouver,
actually,
or New York, made in New York. And, you know, a lot of people are surprised to hear that the majority of film and TV today is not made in Hollywood. It's actually made in states like Georgia and in Illinois, mm-hmm. and the Canadian provinces, New York, New Jersey, Texas. All have really, really robust film incentives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we think that, you know, why not us? Why not Wisconsin? I've been a filmmaker for over 30 years, and my offices used to be on the Capitol Square up until the pandemic, and 90% of the work that I've done has been out of state. Mm-hmm. So, and I've taken advantage of incentives from Illinois, yeah. and from Texas and yeah. other states.
So Governor Evers put this in his budget. Is it going to stay there, do you think?
Or? I hope that it gets through the meat grinder of the legislature.
So we have a state government, as I'm sure you know, which is 50% evil. So, you know, we have the four little legs of the Capitol. One half is evil, the other half is okay. So right now, so I don't know what's going to happen with that. Hey, let me give you an opposing view, though. This sounds like Big Entertainment is putting the squeeze on us when they say we're not going to do this. I mean, can't they take it out in cheese or something? I mean, why don't they want to come to Wisconsin without an incentive?
It's money. It comes down to budget. Down to money. And it isn't just big Hollywood evil, you know, a multinational media conglomerates. There's a little indie picture out right now called My Dead Friend Zoe. It's out in theaters now. I think it started streaming this week. And it was written by a Scani Cheeseheads, a guy from Fitchburg. And the original screenplay takes place here in Madison. And the story is a Madison-centric story. Mm-hmm. It's an indie film. It was made for only a couple million dollars. And yet the producers insisted that incentives be attached to this movie.
Wow.
And it was shot in Portland, Oregon, and the location of the movie was changed to Portland, not Madison.
They don't pretend it's Madison or something.
They changed the creative to Portland,
right,
so it would take place in Portland.
Oh, interesting.
And the writer wanted it's semi-autobiographical. It was his life experience growing up here in Dane County. So we think movies like that should be made here.
Yeah. I should let you know, though, that we are Fitchburg deniers. We don't think Fitchburg actually exists. I just want to let you know that.
Oh. Well, it doesn't in my friend Zoe's world. So that's proof for you.
So we can endorse that movie.
We can endorse that movie fully. Yeah, right.
So outside of the artistic part, we want to encourage, you know, the arts. We're in favor of those types of things. But are there economic reasons to do this?
Yeah, actually,
I'm just lobbing you a softball here.
Sure. Thank you. I appreciate that. it's more of a jobs incentive. It's more of an economic development package than it is an arts package. The Wisconsin hasn't done this, but other states, California, Georgia, Illinois, they've all done economic impact studies, and the results have all been very similar, that for each dollar invested in the entertainment industry, it generates 2 to 3, I think in Georgia's case, it might be just shy of $4 in return investment. Mm. And that money goes a lot to small businesses. A film budget is really made up of, it isn't just paying actors and directors and getting cameras, but you're paying location fees. If you need to shoot in a small restaurant, there's catering fees to pay the crews, there's food, there's carpenters, there's set builders, there's electricians, so there's car rentals, there's hotel accommodations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like one of the few industries that really kind of has a really widespread economic impact on a community. And then there's a tourism aspect. I mean, when was Field of Dreams came out what, 30 years ago? Over 30 years ago? I mean, it's an old movie.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
yet,
that's right.
People are still going to Northeast Iowa to go to visit the
base. To look at a cornfield.
To go look at a cornfield. And talk about how prophetic, you know, build it and they will come. Mm-hmm. I mean, what other reason is there to go to Northeast Iowa other than that?
Yeah.
But there's a definite tourist impact to films that do well and that are shot wherever they shot it.
A friend of mine was visiting, I think it was like Virginia or some, I think it's somewhere in there, but anyway, they went on a tour of the Walton farm from the Waltons from, you know, like the 1970s, you know, but people still want to see where they shot the Waltons.
Wow.
And
there's an old saying that once a movie's made, it lives forever.
Yeah.
And that's true. I mean,
it's like herpes.
Exactly. Well, hopefully not as painful.
Some movies are. Have you seen Battlestar Earth?
Ooh, yeah, unfortunately.
All right, Mike, we're going to wrap up here a little bit. But so what do you think the chances are of it getting through the legislature?
We are hopeful. There is bipartisan support for this.
Oh, good.
So that's very, very encouraging.
That's really rare. That's nice.
But we do encourage listeners to go and contact their state legislators. We make it real easy if you go to the Action Wisconsin website. You can click on the website. There is a form letter. That you just put in your zip code and your email address, and it will send the letter to your legislators.
It's called Action Wisconsin.
Action Wisconsin.
Okay, minions, you have your instructions. Listen closely.
But, and it's, you know, we're hopeful. This is the farthest we haven't had. This is the farthest we've been at getting the attention of our legislatures.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
And we think that it's important for the state. It's important for the arts. It's important for small communities throughout the state.
Great. So, and you've been at this quite a while, right? Like, has it been 10 years? Did I read that somewhere?
Longer than that. Oh, yeah. A lot longer than it's the 13 years, I think, since the last set of, there was briefly incentives that came and went, and this is like incentives 2.0 that mm-hmm. we're trying to reinstate.
Yeah, and with, you know, what's going on with the economy and the tariffs and all that stuff, this is stuff that would be more or less immune to those types of pressures.
And the timing is really good because who knows what's going on at the federal level with Canada, and Canada has such a big part of the production pie.
Oh, sure.
This is it's a really good opportunity for Wisconsin, timing-wise, to take advantage of that.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in, Mike. We've been talking to Mike Graff, and he's from Action Wisconsin.
Yep.
I got that right? Okay.
Thank you.
And that's trying to get some incentives to get some films made in Wisconsin, and hopefully by Wisconsin people. So.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for coming in. So, do you want to plug your movie real quick, too?
So I was one of the screenwriters on Green and Gold, starring Craig T. Nelson and Brendan Skenlar and Charlie Behrens. And it had a really good theatrical run in February and March. And it just started streaming on Apple and Amazon, Google Plus, and Fandango this past week.
Oh, okay.
So it's a story. It's about a Wisconsin dairy farmer that literally bets his farm on whether the Green Bay Packers will win the Super Bowl or not. So, a great story.
That could be your retirement package.
That is my retirement package. All right. Well, thanks, Mike. It was great to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye. Sometime I'll be alone. Sometime I'll be alone.
Baby!
And we're back. Well, that was fun.
Yeah, off mic, we gave Mike some valuable suggestions and
how to lobby the legislature.
How to lobby the your idea of hookers and blow was really, I think it really kind of.
No, I suggested the grocery bag full of small bills.
Yeah,
you came up with the hookers and blow.
Oh, I always do. But fortunately, there's a lot of those in Hollywood. So
yeah, that's
what it's like. Well,
it's a perfect
swimming
match there.
In that.
It's,
yeah, so.
It's synergy.
Exactly.
So, oh.
Hey, I don't know if you heard, but the dear leader, he kind of pulled back on something else this week besides besides the whole tariffs thing.
Is it the omelet bar?
I know it was the Social Security Administration. Remember they were not going to let you they were not going to let you call them, and then they're going to end all of their regional offices.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but they actually apparently somebody, I don't know why, but somebody said that maybe that this policy was supposed to take effect that you could not do any transactions through the phone. It was supposed to take effect on Monday, April 14th, and then at the last minute they decided that they're not going to do that. And of course the thing is they're trying very hard. I think if I had to give them any kind of like the courtesy of thinking that they had a plan, the plan is that they can screw it up so badly that they'll say we have to privatize it because obviously the government doesn't work or whatever.
Yeah.
But their emergency explanation for why they didn't want to have elderly people use the phone was because there was so much fraud. But then apparently their acting deputy commissioner said the agency has assessed cases of widespread fraud and found minimal instances.
Well, so we knew that.
Somebody basically introduced evidence into the discussion.
Oh.
Yeah.
Can we do that now?
Yeah, I was surprised.
That's kind of novel.
I think it's probably that there are like zillions of elderly people.
I thought it was anecdotes.
Yeah.
So,
anecdotes?
Yeah. A dog has been getting checks every month for 400 years.
I thought it was whatever the people on Fox and Friends say.
Well, that's not sure where this starts. I mean,
it kind of goes around, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's sort of like a human centipede or something. Where it's like who comes up with these things and then they just keep repeating them and then they become fact after a while. So
hey, egg prices increased in March.
No,
by 6%. In case you're wondering. Yeah. So
that might get him impeached.
This is according to data released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Well, the plan is to make them so expensive that nobody wants to throw eggs at politicians anymore.
Ah, is that what it is?
Yeah.
I was just noticing that it came from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, or as I like to call it, the former Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Bureau of Labor wishing. Wishes in stardust.
Unicorns vomiting rainbows.
Well, when Trump announced Liberation Day.
Liberation Day.
We'll try not to talk about him too much today. But
that guy.
Some of the people on Fox News, like the later ones that just can not really the news people. Well, they don't really have news people, but the Jesse Waters types.
I don't even know who that is.
They have a new batch come in every once in a while.
Do they have a B team or something?
Well, they have to because the other ones get wiped out because of sexual harassment suits, and so they have to kind of launder them out and then bring in worse people. but one of them was saying that these tariffs will make us tough, and that'll help us end the masculinity crisis that we're facing in this country now.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Okay. But then the next day when the dear leader removed the tariffs, it's like, well, I guess we don't really need them for the masculinity crisis.
I would say they'd scrape the bottom of the barrel on their explanations, but I think they left the bottom of the barrel.
There was no bottom in that barrel.
That's an infinite barrel. No, they all hopped too and said, "Oh, that was the secret plan all along."
Yeah.
And all I could think of was many, many years ago there was this. Do you remember the Pee Wee Herman movie?
Yeah.
And he has this bicycle and he hits a curb and he flies through the air and he crashes and he says, "I meant to do that."
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, that's exactly what the entire Republican Party.
Well,
he meant to do that.
It's tough for the cult members because, as I say, like on Tuesday, it's like these tariffs are great. They're the best thing ever. Yeah. Oh, we love Dear Leader, so smart.
Yeah.
And then Dear Leader flips like the next day, and then they have to like totally.
Are the flying saucers picking us up, or are they not picking us up?
You know, it's like, well, it was the time to remove the tariff. So they accomplished their purpose after
name two. Yeah, two purposes.
Well, Trump announced why because he said that this is his wording. Okay, so don't you know, chastise me for the language.
That's
but he said that after the tariffs, all these other countries, you wouldn't believe how many, were calling and kissing his ass.
Wow.
And he used that phrase a couple times, and then he
keeps it nice and big.
He said they were. I hope it's.
You think those cheeseburgers
bleached or something?
You think those cheeseburgers are for nothing? But you know, he's doing a solid.
Well, there's a lot of countries there. they're lining up, but
more than you might imagine.
And I'm sure it was true because the way he said it is, they would say, "Sir, sir, what can we do to get these tariffs removed?"
Wow, poor guy. He's living in a dream world, and we're living there with him. That's the bad part.
You know, I mean, seriously, take a step back.
Yeah.
No one person should have the ability to tank the world economy like this. This should not be something that's sitting in the desk drawer in the Oval Office for somebody to use just because they feel like it. You know, I mean these tariff powers were passed, as we mentioned a couple weeks ago, in I think it was 1974, and I'm guessing it was probably related to the oil embargo.
Yeah.
And but they had attachments on them, like these were supposed to be for specific situations, for national security or for you know, unfair trade. Yeah. Well, you can just say national security and then do it. And so there needs to be some sort of justification for it, not just I feel like doing this.
Like many decaying societies, we've lost the will for democracy. And the fact that we were so dominant for so long, the dangers inherent in that are not becoming apparent to everybody. I was reading that Australia is thinking, we really need to beef up our military because we cannot rely on those people anymore. They're just, they do crazy things. They elected that guy.
Yeah.
Again, you know, South Korea, they get rid of their dictator. You know, Bolsonaro in Brazil can't run again. But here we are, supposedly the beacon of
liberty.
Come
on in.
Yeah, it's like, oh, that guy. Yeah, sure. He's a maniac and he led a revolt against the U.S. government, but why not?
And he, quote, jokes every day about a third term, even though it's right there in the Constitution.
Right.
But,
any rate.
Oh. In other news, airport scanners can turn you gay.
That explains everything.
A right-wing Christian podcaster claims that airport body scanners can turn you gay.
Okay, how does that work?
Well, it's, I don't know. He's
I think it was the guy that searched me that turned me gay.
Well, yes, I am packing. Why do you ask?
Getting awful friendly down there. I don't mind this.
This guy's name is Andrew Isker.
Oh, yeah.
He's co-host of the right-wing Christian Nationalist podcast.
And gay as a goose, I'm sure.
Well, that's a given.
That's a given, yeah. Right.
He said, I'm not going through the gay beam machine. I won't let him do it. I said, said you're getting patted down too, buddy. I don't want them turning you gay.
So does he explain the exact mechanism of?
I don't know.
Is it
one of those things where it's like a toggle, where like if you walk through and you're gay, and then you walk through again and you're not gay? It's like in the old sitcoms where like someone would get hit in the head and they'd get amnesia, and then they'd have to hit him in the head again with like a frying pan or a bowling pin or something. To cure the amnesia?
Don't put that out there, Mel, because there's going to be some restorative therapy.
TikTok.
Oh, bowling pin. We hadn't thought of
don't
that.
Don't tell RFK Jr. about
the old Jr.
bowling pin treatment.
My Lord.
That'll cure autism.
Yeah, jeez Louise.
But no, I mean, if you're walking through there, does it flip you back and forth then? Or how does it know? I mean, if you're gay, does it make you more gay?
Yeah. Like, I think the only time I ever had a problem with one of those scanners was when I was in the companion and I were in the Netherlands one time. And they had just gotten the ones that do the x-rays as opposed to just the ones that are detecting metal.
Yeah.
And there was this very punky little jerk of a, you know, guard there, whatever their TSA is called in the other ones. And he was like, empty your pockets. And I'm like, okay. And so I was emptying my pockets. You know, he was being very officious. And I forgot there was a little piece of paper in my breast pocket of my shirt. And when I went through the thing, he got really angry at me. And he said, "What are you, Belgian?" Which I found out is like the worst insult you can say to somebody if you're from the Netherlands. So I was like, "No, I'm nay." You
know? That is such human nature. Yeah. I mean, everywhere I've lived, there's always been like the other people.
The stupid people,
you put down. You know, here it's the people from Illinois.
Yep.
When I grew up in southern Minnesota, it was the people from Iowa.
Sure.
And,
but that one's right.
But that one was. Yeah.
Iowa, all the corn you can eat.
When I lived in Duluth, it was Superior.
Was
the one we looked down on.
Right.
Except when the bars were open there and closed in Minnesota, because they stayed open an hour later in Superior.
And then you were really nice to them, right?
Yeah, well, there's like the traffic jam on the bridge going at 1 a.m., which was a great idea.
That's rather inelegant.
So yeah, we need somebody to
yeah.
To
what are you, Belgian?
Kick.
That's what I'm gonna say to people now.
Yeah, yeah, I say that
what
too.
Are you Belgian?
I say that too. So okay, so we're still undecided on whether the airport scanners turn you gay or not.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. Well, that's up for, you know, it needs more research, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Maybe. I just would like to know the exact cause and effect mechanism. I mean, obviously he has some kind of theory about what makes. I assume he's just talking about guys here. What makes guys?
Maybe onto something.
Yeah, he probably thinks lesbians just don't haven't found the right man yet. You know, I mean, this would be consistent, I'm sure, with his thinking. But at any rate, hey, you know, there's some good news. I don't know if you heard about this, but the oil prices are really dropping like crazy. And I don't have any like real, you know, thing to say about that one way or the other, but what's happening is it's actually hurting Russia right now. You know, famously, notoriously, President Trump had spared Russia from tariffs that he had posed on 180 other butt-kissing nations because he's trying to reshape global trade, right? But the price of oil, which, you know, Russia is a primitive economy. It's the world's biggest hillbilly nation, and it's basically all they have going for it. And so the price of oil has dropped 15% since the dear leader here in the United States announced tariffs on April 2nd. And this oil slump is going to make it really hard for Russia to keep spending on their invasion of Ukraine. So it could, interestingly enough, in the long run, his trade measures could inadvertently cause damage to Russia's inability to wage war. Which I'm interested whether Uncle Vladdy will bring that up with him the next time they have a snog session. So we'll see. What you got there?
Well, there's a new pin that you have to wear in D.C. Now, for years, people have had to wear the flag pin.
Oh, yeah.
To show that they love America.
They don't say which flag, but just a flag.
Well, it was the American flag at one point.
Yeah, yeah.
So now, people in the cabinet, and I'm sure this is spreading farther. Oh, yeah, Congress people and senators, too, are wearing a little Donald Trump pin.
Ooh, cult of personality has come already.
Can you see it?
Yes, it's lovely.
It's a little gold
and
pin.
I have some of those with Stalin or Lenin.
It looks, and this looks exactly like the Mao pin.
Yeah, Mao, very nice. Oh, yeah. That is true.
Yeah,
yes.
it's
sorry, we're describing something you can't see, but
that's okay. But it's
online and find it.
But it's got a little pin with Trump, and he's kind of sticking his chin up like he does his little Mussolini
because
thing.
Because he got too many chins. There's a reason why he does that.
And so the people at in the cabinet the cult members have to wear this little I'm sure it's 100% solid gold too.
We're there already.
Yeah, wow. I mean, the article I read did compare it to the Mao pin.
Yeah.
But
very nice.
I think it's more like this.
What's that on your chest, mister? It's a pledge pin, sir.
A pledge pin! On your uniform!
That's it.
I love that guy's plosives. Pledge pin. Say it, don't spray it, man.
So that's how they start the cabinet meetings. No, they bring that guy in.
Oh, my God. I'm sure you saw the ritual abasement of all the cabinet members talking about the dear leader and how glorious it was to be part of the whatever this is that they're doing. And what I loved about it was, I mean, we've seen this before, we saw it in the first Trump administration, but what I loved about it was his look was one of complete boredom. You know, it's like, oh, these rubes are all
these losers kissing my butt.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, let's move on, you know. But of course, if they didn't do it, he'd be annoyed as
right,
well.
Right.
But the fact that they're doing it was kind of like, oh, yeah, whatever. Look at his watch, you know. Oh, you know what he also did? I don't know if you saw this. I hate to be all about the Trump, yeah, but you know, well, what can you do? I mean, he totally put down Elon in the meeting, which cracked me up. That bromance is not long for this world. But he was saying that, he said, yeah, I even bought one of the cars, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But I let my, like, staff drive around it and stuff. You know, I don't, he doesn't have any interest in the car.
Gave it to the maid.
Yeah, he just lets the flunkies drive it, you know. And you know, there's Elon, like, oh, yes, Mr. President, you know, like a little Igor or whatever. Yeah.
I don't know what they reminded me of. Remember way back when Scott Walker was doing all of his stuff when he was governor, and this guy did a prank and called him and said he was one of the Koch brothers, Charles Koch or something.
Oh, yes, yes.
And it was so good because he just really, he got into that attitude of I'm this billionaire and yeah. I'm going to, you know, kind of, I'm going to kick you around a little bit. Yeah. And he said, I had to call you on this phone because I my other phone got destroyed. Maria washed it when she did the laundry. I thought that was such a beautiful touch.
Wow. Yeah. Little chef's kiss there. Hey, I want to let you know that the House of Representatives of these United States is looking out for the little guy. Because, you know, the Republicans now, they're the party of the working class.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard that 100 million times on Fox News, but that's apparently it. Well, on Wednesday, they approved resolutions striking down a $5 cap on most bank overdraft fees and overturning a rule that would have given a federal regulator greater oversight powers over payment apps run by large technology companies. Only one Republican voted to help consumers, basically.
Wow.
With respect to outrageous overdraft fees. And that was, we'll just name him, say his name. His name is Ryan McKenzie. He's Republican of Pennsylvania.
Hmm.
So the overdraft fee limit was struck down 217 to 211. And basically they're saying, yeah, that's banks, you know, they got to, even though the overdraft fees half the time is, you know, it has nothing to do except for just generating profit margins for them. So whatever you guys want to do, just go the hell for it.
I would imagine the cost for the banks is similar to sending an email.
Yeah.
I mean, so
yeah.
Like nothing.
Exactly.
All right, we're gonna have to take a break, play some announcements, and then we're gonna come back with.
I got some good stuff. I got some stuff that's not about Trump.
Yeah, we'll try to spread it out a little bit here.
Yeah, spread it out. Spread out the manure. Yes, exactly.
I have penguins in the Florida Capitol.
Oh, excellent.
I don't know if they're on the telly or not, but we'll find out.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
Do you have an insatiable curiosity about the world? Do you find yourself provoking conversations with your friends and coworkers? Are you a strong listener? Then you should consider applying to become the next host of A Public Affair, WORT's daily hour-long call-in talk program. We're now accepting applications for this volunteer position. The next host will be the voice of Tuesday's show and join a stellar lineup of folks who engage listeners in conversations on social, cultural, and political issues of importance every day of the week. We're looking for someone who is curious and well-informed, comfortable speaking on air, someone who can think on their feet, and has at least 5 hours a week to prepare and host the show. And of course, we'll need you to be here every Tuesday from 12 to 1 p.m. Apply by May 2nd. To find out more information or apply, go to WORTFM.org/talkhost.
Make Music Madison is back on June 21st for the 13th annual day of free outdoor live music across the city. Here's how you can get involved. Online registration for musicians to participate and venues to schedule events is open through June 1st at makemusicmadison.org. All genres and styles of music are welcome, and there are no age limits or skill levels required. The Make Music Madison website is used to match artists who need a stage with venues who seek performers. At noon on June 20th, matchmaking ends and all shows must be confirmed in the system. Again, advance registration for venues and musicians at makemusicmadison.org closes at 11:59 p.m. on Sunday, June 1st. And mark your calendars for Make Music Day on Saturday, June 21st. Bringing you a variety of music every day of the year. This is WORT Madison.
And we're back. A couple of things in the Mel and Floyd mailbag at melandfloydmailbag@gmail.com. Steve sends us an announcement that, let's see, there's a Crystal Lake man accused of charging an officer with ukulele. Ooh, the story's the formatting is a little weird, but we'll go with that. That's I think that tells the story. Oh, and what else? Oh, we've got something from our pal Helena White.
Oh, excellent!
And Helena says that. Hi, Mel and Mr. Smarty Pants. Sadly, there is a war again in Gaza, so I have resumed my Honk for Gaza ceasefire sessions on the corner of East Washington. Here's a highly edited report from some of the 63 cars who honked for a ceasefire in Gaza this week. Enjoy. Let's see what that sounds like. Sounds like me at a red light when I'm looking at my phone. Yeah. Well, thank you, Helena, and thanks for the good work you do. So,
Helena, I don't know if you saw this story, but it was kind of encouraging. Hundreds of reservists and retired officers in the Israeli Air Force signed a letter just yesterday, urging the Israeli government to agree to a deal with Hamas,
really,
to return hostages, even at the price of stopping the war in Gaza. The letter was signed by about 1,000 people, including a former chief of staff and other former senior military leaders. And we just have to always remember, when we're thinking about these kinds of things, there are people in Israel who are trying very hard to pull back from the edge. And these people who signed this letter, obviously, from the military itself, are appalled about what's going on. Mm-hmm.
That's something that gets lost a lot of times, you know, like through our whole life. We've had, like, the enemy. We've had, you know, the Russians and the Red Chinese and the people in Iraq or Iran or, you know, whoever our enemy of the week was. Yeah. And we forget that there are actual real people there that probably don't, you know, buy into a lot of this stuff, that it's usually just the people pushing the buttons.
Be very careful when the people who are the leaders of a society that's corrupt say, oh, this is what everybody wants.
Right.
And it's like, no, that's probably not what everybody
wants.
Yeah. So. Hey, the Pope made an appearance this week.
I saw that.
Yeah, he's out and about. It was kind of unexpected. He showed up on Sunday. It was the first public appearance he'd had since becoming unwell and leaving. He'd left a Rome hospital 2 weeks ago. So he showed up at St. Peter's Square near the end of a Mass and didn't say much. He's not feeling that great. But he said, happy Sunday, everybody. Many thanks.
And he did. He had brought the T-shirt cannon with him and shot some T-shirts into the crowd. And then he had to leave. So
I told you that we saw him one time. We were there. And
he looked at you, right?
Yeah. Well, no. What happened was, it was funny. It was a packed. The square was packed, and we wanted to see him before, you know, somebody poisoned him. And that's the usual way they do it.
Natural causes.
Yeah, exactly. So we were there on Wednesdays is when he does his walkabouts, back when he was feeling better. And so we were there, but they were so, it was so packed we couldn't get close to it.
Yeah.
And but he went up and he was little, because he doesn't live in the papal palace. He just lives like a little room. And so he went up to his little room and he gave a blessing. And I was constipated for 3 days, so I figured this is what happens when people like me get blessed. You know, kind of works in reverse. So anyway,
there's a little curse for you.
He was a nice man, though. He seemed very nice. He was saying a lot of stuff in Latin, but I'm sure it was pleasant. So.
Yeah.
What's not to like, right? Hey, just want to also mention, there's a little, try to get some little happy news or something, a little positive around the edges here. A jury in Louisiana has ruled that Chevron must pay a parish, now remember parishes are what they call counties in Louisiana, about $745 million to help restore wetlands that the jury said that the energy company had been harming for decades. This was reached just last week, and it's likely to influence other lawsuits that are being filed in other parishes in the state against energy giants there. So this particular parish is one of at least 40 coastal parishes that have filed against fossil fuel companies. This is the end of a long, long haul, because these suits, and this is the way it always works, this was filed in 2013.
Sure.
So here it is, 12 years later. But at least there's some movement there and a victory for the plaintiffs. So
we're good. People in Alaska are worried about this thing that's going to spew all kinds of toxic gas into the air.
Yeah.
And it's not a politician.
my mind went there.
No, it's Mount Spur, an 11,000 foot tall volcano, about 80 miles from Anchorage. And when it blows, the event would be explosive, according to the scientist previously in charge of it. He's probably been laid off by now. But so the ash-producing episodes would last 3 to 4 hours, resulting in Anchorage and other nearby communities being engulfed in a giant cloud. Maybe we'll get like a Vesuvius-type thing there. We could get all the people in Anchorage just frozen in time as they're like drinking their vodka and punching each other or whatever they do in Alaska.
Excellent. Hey, here's another piece of relatively positive news. This is from an analysis that was done by a group called the Global Renewables Watch, which maps all onshore wind and every large-scale solar farm in the world by using AI and detailed satellite imagery. And this is a collaboration that's been done with the satellite provider Planet, the Nature Conservancy, and Microsoft's AI for Good Lab. And so they were looking at the spread of wind and solar over time. And they were looking at choosing locations, where various electric grids were doing this and that and the other thing. And they've discovered that apparently there's more and more nations that are creating more and more basically clean energy solutions across the globe. Interestingly enough, China leads the world in installed solar and wind capacity by a big margin. And it's been the pace of it is picking up, apparently, according to this study, again, done by Global Renewables Watch. In the United States, electricity from solar and wind combined surpassed coal for the first time last year, although you may have seen the president wants to do something about that. Beautiful, clean coal.
Beautiful, clean coal.
Yeah, exactly. Solar alone accounted for more than 80% of new capacity added in 2024, a third of which was installed in Texas. And in California, the addition of utility-scale battery storage helped extend solar power after dark and stabilize grids. So the view from space is, it may not be fast enough, but it's pretty darn fast, and the people are happy with that.
Good. All right. Speaking of coal, I hate to do another Trump thing, but
who?
he signed an executive order Tuesday to benefit the coal industry, appearing in front of a backdrop of coal miners at the White House. And he believes that that Americans don't want desk jobs or anything like that. He says Americans want to work in the coal mines. He says, one thing I learned about coal miners is that's what they want to do.
No, they don't. I'm a coal miner.
I know. That's
I not want to do
the
that.
The only reason I brought this in is
oh, my Lord.
Wave a red flag.
Excuse me. Excuse me.
You could give them a penthouse on Fifth Avenue and a different kind of job, and they'd be unhappy.
No.
They want to mine coal. That's
no, they
what,
don't.
That's what they love to
do. It's all they have to do.
That's what they love to do.
I mean, you can be stoical and love what you have to do, but no, nobody ever says, I want to go down. It's dark is a dungeon and dank is the dew. The dangers are many and the pleasures are few. What more do you need to know?
You're pining for the mines.
Oh, man alive. What a giant
poor,
jackass.
Poor Truth. Truth is just all beaten up on the side of the road.
She's taking it on the chin. Hey, they discovered more moons going around Saturn.
Really?
They
I
did.
Love that.
There are so many moons.
There's like hundreds, aren't there?
They're very good. Oh, you keep up on these things. So, yeah, this is the latest tally for those of you who are keeping track. Jupiter has 95 moons. But Saturn is now up to 274.
Oh my goodness.
The most recent observations that have been done at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics shows they found this is amazing. They found over 100 new moons in this new survey that they did.
Wow.
Now many of the moons are very small. They're probably only the result of like things running into each other,
sure,
creating smaller
sure.
chunks of things.
Yeah.
But
well, that's
kind of
like the rings. There,
but and so they're small compared to our moon, which is relatively small as moons go. But as long as the rocks have trackable orbits, they count as a moon. So this is, by the way, this is according to the International Astronomical Union. They're the ones that have the final say on this.
So how many do they have? 200 and?
They have 270. Well, I don't know who's there, but Saturn has 274.
Wow.
So that's a lot.
I would hate to be a werewolf on the moon and on Saturn.
You'd never get any rest.
No, you'd just be hairy all the time.
There's
another full
moon. God damn it.
Hey, we got a record that has been broken in Cambodia. A rat has earned the world record for sniffing landmines in Cambodia.
Excellent.
It's a landmine hunting rat. He sniffed out more than 100 mines and pieces of unexploded ordnance, according to a charity that works on this. His name is Ronan. He's a giant African pouched rat. He's tracked down 109 landmines and 15 other potentially deadly war remnants since his deployment.
Deployment?
In 2021.
Yes, sir.
He's been named. He's 5 years old.
Yeah,
and
that's old for a rat.
Probably won't get much older, I would guess.
Yeah,
but
no.
He's been named the most successful mine detection rat, and then in parentheses they put MDR. It's the military.
We gotta have an acronym or initials or something.
His exceptional accomplishments.
What's his rank? That's what I want to know. Corporal. Corporal Ronan.
He'll be on the Joint Chiefs of Staff pretty soon.
Yeah, don't let Trump know about him.
I like the cut of his jib.
Yeah, right.
He could be the new the Department of Defense Secretary.
We already got one rat.
Yeah.
Sure. Hey, you know, Companion and I were recently in Vienna, but something happened right after we left that was notable. This was that they found in a soccer field in a neighborhood right next to the Danube. Archaeologists have found a mass grave that goes back to when the Roman Empire was battling the Germanic tribes. Because, you know, Vienna was right on the borderline, basically. It was part of the Roman Empire, but it was right on the borderline of the area that they controlled. And what they found there was they found this mass grave, and they also found Roman military remains. So the radiocarbon dating that they did on the bones traced them to somewhere in the first or second century AD. This is a period where they were in charge of this area, the Roman emperors, Domitian, Trajan, people like that. And so they found near the foot of one of the skeletons, they found nails that came from one of the military shoes that they wore back in the day, called caligae. So it's very unusual to find skeletal remains because ancient Romans almost exclusively practiced cremation until about the 3rd century when Christianity started taking over. So for all of Middle Europe, this is a quote, from the 1st century, we don't have any unburned, uncremated human remains. So aside from the military aspect, this is according to Michaela Binder. She's the lead anthropologist on the project. She said, aside from the military aspect, it's absolutely a unique chance to study the life histories of people in the first century A.D.
Oh, very cool.
So by the way, Vienna had a name back in the day, which is similar to what it's named today, because, of course, the name that it has today is derived from that. It was called Vindobona, and that was where the legionnaires would camp as they went out and tried to combat the sweeping down Germanic hordes, the Visigoths and the Vandals and all the rest of them. So, So yeah, they didn't have a chance to burn their remains. They just basically threw them in the ground.
Wow. They're always finding like cool stuff like that. So, and you'd think, I mean, here we are after 2,000 years, we're still finding all these things that we...
Sure. Know, well, think about it. The plastics we'll be finding in the future. You think you're finding Roman soldiers Roman soldiers never go away. Wait till you think about that Clorox bottle.
Diet Coke bottle.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, here's some good news from Dane County in Madison. Residents now have quick access to life-saving medications thanks to harm reduction vending machines. It's a new effort by Dane County, SSM Health, UW Health, and UW Madison. It aims to increase access to naloxone
yep.
and other items that can help prevent or treat a potentially fatal overdose.
Yep.
This involves the placement of harm reduction vending machines outside two hospitals in the community. So the machines offer supplies at no cost. They're stocked with items that include the naloxone, fentanyl test strips, menstrual kits, and other harm reduction materials. They're located outside of SSM Health St. Mary's Hospital and UW Health University Hospital Emergency Department at 600 Highland Avenue. So that's a cool thing that they're.
We have that at my place of work, actually.
Do you really?
We have little stations, and they're not vending machines. They're just available if
yeah.
something happens.
Yeah.
And they have a little instruction thing, and then we send the people in charge there send around information about how they work and stuff like
mm-hmm.
that.
Oh, that's really cool.
Nice, yeah. They've been doing studies with urban spiders. This is from a woman by the name of Eileen Hebbets. She's a biologist at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln. And she's an author of a paper on what spiders do in cities to deal with unwanted noise pollution. Turns out that if you're a spider, you don't have ears like a person does. But here's the thing. You can feel the vibrations that are going on around you. And so this professor was very interested in whether that it annoyed the spiders enough to have them alter their strategies for making webs. And it turned out that this study, which was done, Dr. Hebbets was assisted by someone named Brandy Pessman, who was a postdoctoral research associate. They rounded up a lot of these arachnid, this. You know, city mouse and country mouse. This is city spider and country spider, and found out what the city spiders did to deal with this, as opposed to their country bumpkin relatives. And they put them in a container with a speaker at the bottom that played either loud or quiet white noise. And they found out that the city spiders built webs that were basically more insulated against transmitting outside vibrations. So their webs were essentially quieter. They created their own sort of noise-canceling rooms. Like, oh, my God, this racket is driving me crazy. I just can't eat with all this noise. So they basically found ways of insulating their webs from ambient noise
that's
pollution.
That's great. I
yeah,
love that.
That's, you got a deal. You got a deal.
I should give them some LSD, too, and see what happens.
Yeah, yes.
More people do not want kids. The number of Americans who never want to have children has doubled.
Yeah.
It's from
they're just parasites.
Get out of my basement.
Yeah.
Michigan State University published this in the Journal of Marriage and Family. The number of people in the U.S. who never want to have children has doubled, as I said,
yeah.
over the last decade. It's grown from 14%, and these are of young people,
yeah.
14% to 29%.
Sure.
And during the same time frame, non-parents who plan to have children dropped from 79% to 59%.
Oh, Lord, that's pretty significant. Well, I guess the population problem is solving itself.
Wow. Yeah, that's a pretty big deal. I mean,
well, kids, if you want to really not have to worry about it, a new study just came out from a...
Go through the gay scanners.
The gay scanners, but the other thing you might want to do is smoke more marijuana, apparently.
Yeah.
A new study that was done by a guy by the name of Dr. Alexander Pastashak said that male fertility apparently is affected by heavy marijuana use. He started looking to see whether, you know, he did a study to see whether it was working or not. Dr. Pastashak, by the way, is a urologist at the University of Utah. And so now that cannabis is legal, it's easier to track things like this. It was basically cannabis has been used for either medicinal or recreational purposes in all but 11 states, and was used at least once by 52 million Americans in 2021, which is the most recent year we have stats for. And so we're starting to find out more stuff about it. He looked at this was a sort of mega study he did. So he looked at 48 studies from around the world, and he found that cannabis products do harm to a man's chance of conceiving children. And so people were asking him this question. They were wondering, you know, and it's just, I think that the sperm just, you know, whatever, I'll get to that later.
That's a long ways.
Yeah,
to go,
I'll just sit here for a while. Giggle.
I'll let Brian do it.
Yeah, today. Brian will do it. Yeah, and then Brian's like, yeah, whatever. So they have some pretty good evidence for this. The studies were conducted throughout the 1990s, and they found that cannabinoid in the body, which is called anandamide, plays a critical role in reproduction, and it prevents more than one sperm cell from fertilizing an egg at a time. So the same receptors used by this chemical could be hijacked by THC and marijuana, which could be overloading the sperm signaling system. So the sperm needs to know what it's doing, in some sense of know. And you will not be surprised to find out that they did a, this is kind of bad. They did a study of 229 Jamaican men to discover how moderate cannabis use affected their ability to conceive. And there was a nearly 3.5 times greater likelihood of misshapen sperm.
Really?
Which, of course, lowers the likelihood of fertilization. They also did a study of 113 Jordanian men, and they found that sperm movement, which is called motility, is lower in cannabis users, and that's what we were sort of making fun of. So it's kind of like lazy sperm. So misshapen and lazy sperm, neither of these are good. Known as the cell's engine, the mitochondria propels the sperm towards the egg. And apparently the mitochondria gets very confused what to do once you give it enough cannabis.
So. Wow.
So that problem will solve itself.
I don't want to have kids and
do anything else.
And I can't.
I can't.
Yeah. So, Pokemon cards saved this fan's life by blocking a gunshot. This is like a spin on the old the Bible in the
yeah,
in
yeah.
the pocket thing that took the bullet. Of course, they can't really, you know, get to the point in this story. Pokemon has been very popular for many years, I'd say. There's a fan who had the cards in the, but they had them in their pockets,
sure.
And they were asleep at home when they were woken by a loud explosions.
Yeah,
and. Apparently, this was a common enough occurrence that this fans just assumed it was gunshots being fired by their neighbor.
No. Oh. I remember living in that neighborhood.
They believed the neighbor accidentally fired their gun toward the house, and they found a hole in the wall next to a Tupperware bin containing their Pokemon card collection. When they inspected the bin, they found the bullet had been stopped by one of the card decks. So Pokemon could save your life, people. Just
wow. Here's a not surprising story. It turns out that, as far as we can tell, the knack for making deadly tools goes back much farther than we thought among humans. 6 million years ago, our ape-like ancestors probably smashed nuts with rocks or caught termites with sticks. But then about 3.3 million years ago, hominins began using flakes of stone, probably to cut flesh from carcasses or chop plants. Well, by 1.5 million years ago, they were making more sophisticated tools made of bone. And they figured that this about this time that they started using it to poke one another.
That og is ticking me off.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of which, look who's in the studio.
The real Jaguar's
the
here.
The real Jaguar's here.
Yay.
He's got a pointed stick. Look out.
this has got to be in... Oh, it's in... It's in Great Britain somewhere, of course. Parrot screamed F you at firefighters lured down with cigarettes. So there's parrots up in a tree and the firefighters couldn't get it down, but they offered it a smoke and it came down apparently.
Okay, let me just give you one last little thing. This was something this week that I wanted to take to heart and I want to share with the listeners. This is from a man by the name of Ethan Cross. He's the director of the Emotion and Self-Control Laboratory at the University of Michigan, and he studies emotions and how to manage emotions. And one of his big pieces of advice is you don't always have to process your emotions. The prevailing wisdom in therapy and on social media is that we should face negative emotions head on, but there's no evidence that that helps whatsoever. The trouble is that avoidance is toxic, people say, but that's not necessarily the case. Sometimes it's best not to choose between approaching or avoiding, but to shift the two intentionally. Go do something else.
All right.
Shift your attention.
All right. Time to declare. The weekend. Don't face any emotions this week. Just get out and enjoy yourself.
Change the subject.
Push those way down.
Way down.
Yeah, so, hey, it's 2:00. You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM, Madison. Panso, it's great to see you.
You too, buddy.
Thanks for coming in. Thanks for listening, everybody. And we will yak at you next Friday. The kiosk is next. And then, Who Cooks for You with The Real Jaguar.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, April 11th.
This is Bird Note. This rollicking song belongs to a black-headed grosbeak. Like most birds, the male grosbeak begins singing in earnest a few days after reaching his traditional nesting grounds in spring. And like most birds, he sings frequently when trying to attract a mate. He'll sing a bit less while he and his mate incubate eggs, but pick up the pace again after the young hatch. By late summer, his singing will cease. Ever wonder how much a bird sings in one day? Some patient observers